All right, great. So, Edgewell is going to be the next company to present this morning. It's been a little over a year since the separation of Edgewell and Energizer. With much of the tremendous organizational change related to the spin now behind them, Edgewell is moving into the next phase of its evolution, focusing on accelerating growth and cost reduction. Here today to discuss Edgewell's strategy, including the importance of innovation, the actions taken to accelerate growth, and long-term goals, are CEO David Hatfield, CFO Sandy Sheldon, excuse me, and Colin Hutchinson, VP of International. And with that, I'll turn it over to David.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. We recently completed our first full year as a standalone company, and I'm pleased to be here today to share our thoughts on that first year, and to give you an update on how we're viewing the state of the business and our long-term financial algorithm that we introduced over a year ago at our Investor Day in June of 2015. Before we get started, please note that we'll be making forward-looking statements, and that we'll be presenting non-GAAP financial measures. So I'd like to start by giving you an overview of how we're tracking so far this year, and then I'll hand it over to Colin and to Sandy. What I hope you'll take away from today is that we're off to a positive start and are tracking to both our top line and our bottom line goals. We've made solid gains in both wet shave and sun. We've successfully completed a very complex and wide-ranging organizational change. We're still bullish on growth prospects in wet shave and sun. And though there are several challenges ahead of us, we still feel confident that the algorithm we presented over a year ago is the right way to think about this business moving forward. For those of you here that may not know us as well, Edgewell Personal Care is a pretty unique company. At a $2.4 billion in sales, we're a relatively small pure play personal care company, and we compete across many categories from wet shave and the shave preps to fem care, sun and skin to infant. Where we participate, we have strong brand equity and a strong competitive presence with number one or number two positions generally in each of our categories. And for our size, we have a relatively broad footprint, competing in over 50 countries and generating about 40% of our sales outside the U.S. At our Investor Day over a year ago, we introduced our value drivers based on a strong foundation with strong brands, a differentiated role in the categories, and a culture dedicated to innovation. Our first and top priority is to accelerate top-line growth. It's a point of emphasis across the entire organization. Fiscal year 16 will be a transition year as we manage all the changes from the spin and our go-to-market changes. But we're confident we will improve our top-line performance and grow 2 to 3% over the medium term. In the terms of the other drivers of shareholder value, we'll continue to build on our strong track record of managing and reducing costs, generating strong cash flows, and growing through disciplined M&A. Over the medium term, we believe that our execution of these drivers will translate into 2%-3% top-line growth, margin expansion of 50 basis points, and in the high single-digit EPS growth. As we indicated on Investor Day, we had four main priorities for fiscal year 2016. Our first priority was to complete our go-to-market transition and a functional realignment initiatives around the globe, and to align our teams around the new structure and priorities. Our second priority was to execute against our segment plans and to grow underlying sales in the wet shave and sun care. Third, we had to solidify and return to a growth in North America, and our fourth priority was to continue our momentum internationally. These were our priorities, and this was our plan. And through Q3, we've met our change management milestones and are on a track to deliver our plan in the terms of a top line and EBITDA. Our segment priorities for Edgewell were to grow share in our largest segment, wet shave. Through Q3, underlying sales are up 2.5% behind our successful global launch of next generation Hydro, as well as a trade-up innovation in private label. Secondly, we were looking to accelerate sales growth in sun care. Through Q3, we've grown worldwide sun care sales by 3%, and in the U.S. we've gained share on both our Banana Boat and our Hawaiian Tropic brands behind strong innovation execution in the U.S., where we have four of the top 10 new items. The third priority was to defend and hold share in fem care while increasing its profitability over time. While we've made progress in a number of areas, this remains a work in the process. And the fourth, turnaround and stabilize sales in infant care. This also isn't complete, although results you have strengthened sequentially behind NPD against Diaper Genie. Our plan called for returning to growth in North America, but behind continued focus on the fundamentals. We've increased marketing spend over the past 12 months against a strong NPD roadmap across the portfolio. Our status finds us on track to increase organic sales for the fiscal year, fueled by growth in wet shave and sun. And in wet shave, we've gained share in the U.S. for the last five fiscal quarters. And in the April through June quarter, we've increased share in all three segments: men's systems, women's systems, and disposables. Internationally, we believe we could continue our record of organic growth, and in fact accelerate growth over the medium term. I'll let Colin, who runs our international area to fill you in more depth. But I will report that in addition to successfully executing some impressive change management across the entire organization, we're on track to deliver top-line goals for international, growing underlying sales 3.4% in wet shave and 3.2% overall year-to-date. So in summary, I believe we've navigated the separation and managed the extensive organizational and go-to-market changes well. And while doing so, we're also delivering against the four strategic priorities we had laid out at Investor Day. That said, we certainly recognize we face several challenges in the coming years, and that we emphasize and retain in our company a strong sense of urgency, vigilance, and a passion to win. But we also have tremendous opportunities ahead of us, and I'm confident that we've built a strong platform to deliver our value drivers over the coming years. And with that, thank you. And with that, I'll hand it over to Colin.
Morning, everyone. Thank you, David. As you can see in the screen, my name is Colin Hutchison. I'm responsible for the commercial performance of all of our markets outside of the Americas. I'm planning to cover an overview of the growth prospects for the key categories we compete in, and then I'll highlight some of the strategies aimed at delivering the sales growth projection underpinning our growth algorithm. So let's turn to our categories globally, first of all. The chart on the left shows the wet shave category globally remains attractive with good growth rates. The chart on the right of the screen shows the U.S. wet shave market, which is also predicted to grow, albeit at a slightly lower rate than international markets. There's been a lot of discussion about the health of the wet shave category in the U.S. Until recently, we've been unable to track the shifting of category sales in non-measured on- and offline retail using traditional Nielsen tracking data. By non-measured, I mean clubs, value retailers, and e-retail. We now have complete information, and you can see clearly in the light green block at the top of the chart on the right, non-measured is taking category share from Nielsen measured. And the category is also growing more than 1%. In international, there are opportunities to meet consumer needs right across the value spectrum, with plenty of scope for the historical trade-up model in wet shave, from single blade through to super premium. As you'll hear later, we believe we're uniquely positioned within our portfolio to satisfy those needs. I also wanted to make a broader point to give context to some of the comments I'll be making in the next few minutes. There is, understandably, given we're a U.S.-based company, a lot of commentary about the health of the wet shave category in the U.S. and the relative strength of leading players. Most of that dialogue is focused on U.S. men's measured by Nielsen, and I've just demonstrated that even in the U.S., Nielsen doesn't show the whole picture for the performance of the category. From a global category perspective, men's measured in the U.S. represents 9% of category sales, so it's important. But when it comes to finding growth opportunities, there's over 90% of the category in other product segments and other geographies where the dynamics are different from U.S. men's measured. I hope this context helps you get a wider perspective on our prospects for growth outside U.S. Nielsen measured, both in the United States and in international markets. Our other lead global category is sun care. It, too, has good growth prospects of around 3% per annum in the coming years. This growth has been driven by higher growth rates in Asia and Latin America, as awareness of the need for daily sun protection is growing around the world. The opportunity for sun care brands is to convert this into deeper household penetration and increase frequency of use. In Australia, for example, we're market leaders with Banana Boat, and household penetration is 50% higher than the U.S. So, having reviewed the outlook for our global categories, I now come to how we plan to achieve our number one goal of accelerating top-line growth. I'll briefly cover each of these strategies in the upcoming charts. Innovation across our portfolio is key to our growth, and I'll give a couple of examples of innovation across the value spectrum in a moment. We have a unique portfolio within our competitor set. We aim to serve all consumers and customer needs. Our combination of leading brand and private label solutions leads to a more holistic and strategic relationship with customers, where private label is a key component of the customer strategy. We have several examples where, by offering both private label and brand, our branded relationship has grown with that customer. Earlier, I pointed out the potential for us in international markets with category growth rates higher than our domestic U.S. market. This growth potential is also reflected within our own business, with our growth rates in wet shave and sun outpacing global category growth rates. We are directing our investment dollars behind growth brands and growth channels. The Hydro franchise, launched in the last few years, has benefited from these focused and meaningful investment levels, and you'll see a chart on that impact shortly. Likewise, we're redirecting financial and human resource towards growth channels with positive results. So turning to the first of those strategies, innovation, we have an outstanding track record of innovation with, as you can see on the chart, a number of industry firsts based on well-researched consumer insights, supported by a wide-ranging patent portfolio and an R&D capability which pushes the boundaries of product performance. As we look forward, we see the need to push these boundaries further in product, pack, consumer communication, and claims. We have a strong pipeline of innovation in development. And here's an example of what we can deliver through our innovation pipeline. Hydro has been growing every year since launch. We continue to innovate on men's. We launched an upgraded version of Hydro Men's earlier this year. We introduced well-positioned women's and disposable executions with more to come. And we still haven't rolled out Hydro to all the geographies around the world. Each innovation has multidimensional potential and multi-year impact. So the combination of outstanding and insightful innovation and targeted brand investment delivers meaningful sales dollars and growth. In this example, around $100 million in just 2 years. You've also heard us talk about being a challenger in this category, in the shave category, and also about meeting consumer needs across the value spectrum, using our full portfolio and our innovation capabilities. This is an example where all of this comes together. Most of you will be aware of this recent innovation on the screen, bringing a value and product performance win to consumers. We're in the early weeks of this launch, and with distribution still building in the U.S., we're pleased with the performance and consumer acceptance. Our retail partners are delighted. You can see examples on the screen of Walmart, Target, and CVS in the U.S. They're delighted because we bring news to the segment, innovation to their private label lineup, and value to their customers. You might also have heard that there's a P&G lawsuit with us on this innovation. We were expecting it. We stand behind our product. We stand behind our claims. And we're used to P&G pulling every competitive lever when we challenge them in men's. Turning now to our portfolio. We're unique in the wet shave category as we offer a full range of products from basic single and twin to super premium in both branded and private label. Our brand and private label ranges are differentiated. The brand focuses on specific consumer insights like Extreme 3's flexible blades, Intuition's unique moisturization benefits, and Hydro's advanced lubrication. Private label, on the other hand, offers high-performing value alternatives to the leading brand, Gillette, in our category. This portfolio serves us well in both emerging and developed economies. As you all know, there are value-seeking consumers in developed countries and high-end consumers in emerging economies. It also changes the conversation with our retail partners. The fact that we have a total category perspective and solutions in all price tiers across brand and own label leads to a more holistic and strategic relationship and constructive partnering on category management. Lastly, it's a little-known fact that in markets in which we compete, our sales by unit are close to P&G's volume by unit. Think about that as numbers of individual shaving occasions when consumers are engaging with our portfolio. That consumer is open to trade up across the rest of our portfolio. Moving on now briefly to international markets for which I'm responsible. International, we see opportunities for greater growth based on category momentum and a new organizational model. We implemented significant changes to our go-to-market organization at the point of separation in July last year. We asked a lot of our people in terms of continuing to run the business and simultaneously redesign it. One of the advantages of our scale is we can connect quickly with our teams, and they understand what needs to be done and run with it. We reduced our management layers, leading to quicker decision-making. Thanks to the renewed focus on Wet Shave and Sun internationally, we quickly saw better plans and execution. These focus benefits are flowing through to our in-market results. For example, our highest ever market share in Poland, share growth in France, share growth in Japan, share growth in the UK, just to mention a few. We also dramatically increased the number of markets managed via distributor partners. We selected 15 new distributors and are very satisfied with their professionalism and competence. The transition, although complex, has been relatively smooth. We have a solid track record of growth in international markets, and we see this as a key driver and a number one goal of accelerating profitable sales. All the levers for growth mentioned at the top right of this chart are being pulled by the teams. Given we changed nearly everything in every market just over 14 months ago, we're pleased that our sales growth has been maintained in line with recent trends and spread broadly across all geographies in both key categories. In addition, a new distributor setup is delivering better than expectations, with strong growth in places as diverse as the Netherlands and Thailand, demonstrating our ramped-up capabilities in distributor management are being leveraged by the whole organization. So shifting gears to channels. Earlier I talked about meaningful investment in growth brands and channels, and for brands I gave you the example of Hydro. For channels, the hot topic is e-commerce, at least in the US and China. I prefer to call it e-retail, as we do e-commerce right across our value chain. There's been a lot of comment on this topic recently, particularly with the news about Dollar Shave Club. There's no doubt there's a channel shift going on in terms of the growth of e-retail. And it's the largest growth rate opportunity in razors and blades, coming from a relatively low base. The US and China are the two largest markets currently, but all large markets are experiencing similar growth rates from very different base points. From our point of view, we see e-retail as attractive. We can showcase our full portfolio, which we consider a unique strength, so we can showcase this on Amazon or Tmall, which is impossible in bricks and mortar retail. In emerging economies like China, the growth of mobile connectivity means e-retail can leapfrog brick and mortar as it represents a lower cost route to market. We anticipate similar trends in other developing economies. We participate actively with our omnichannel retailers and always have done. But right now we see getting our proposition right in pure play like Amazon and Tmall as our lead priority in e-retail. Razors and blades is our lead global category, so we're investing financial and human resource behind Wet Shave and focusing on the markets of scale. Any learning is quite easily transferable, again, much easier than it is in brick and mortar. A couple of facts you might not be aware of about our e-commerce business. Our sales growth in US pure play and omnichannel retail has outpaced the e-commerce channel growth in each of the last 3 years. We have active partnerships with 12 or more direct-to-consumer players in North America, Latin America, Europe, and Asia, with at least 4 more coming online next year. It's true, none of them has the scale of DSC, but we're well-placed as their businesses evolve. So in closing, I hope I've given you a flavor of just some of the initiatives we're driving to achieve our growth goals and why we feel confident we can deliver the growth underpinning our algorithm. Continuing our strong track record in innovation, using the breadth and depth of our portfolio to meet consumer and customer needs across diverse geographies and retail channels, We've reorganized and are fully functioning in international markets. Our new structure is working, and results to date demonstrate that, with potential for further acceleration. And finally, I talked about meaningful investment dollars against growth channels and brands. And I showed that this generates good scale of growth potential with Hydro, an example I showed earlier. I also talked about our agility to redirect financial and human resource behind growth channels like e-commerce, but again, our results demonstrate positive momentum and faster rate of growth in the channel itself. Thank you for listening, and I'll hand over to Sandy.
All right, good morning, everyone. I'm going to start with our long-term algorithm, talk a little bit about our value drivers, but focus most of my discussion around our second value driver related to systematic cost reduction. But first, just to cover off on our long-term algorithm, our objective is to deliver sustained earnings growth to our shareholders, and we're going to do that with organic revenue growth of 2-3%, operating margin expansion of around 50 basis points, high single-digit growth in adjusted EPS, and strong cash flow conversion of a minimum of 100%. As David walked through, we have these five value drivers that will help help us deliver this financial algorithm. Colin just spoke quite a bit to the accelerating top-line growth objective. Like I said, I'm going to work through the systematic cost reduction programs in a few slides. And obviously, substantial free cash flow conversion is a key objective of ours as well. Just to cover off on sales for a second, our 2-3% organic growth objective is really captured in our growth in wet shave and our accelerated growth in sun, particularly in international. We do plan to leverage innovation and full portfolio of offerings in femcare to maintain sales in femcare and continue to stabilize our infant care. So all of those key strategies that Colin worked through will help us achieve our goal of 2-3% on sales. I do want to speak for a minute on our A&P investment objectives. To support these top-line growth objectives, we will make meaningful investments in our A&P. We did significantly increase A&P in 2014 and expect to hold or increase that level to drive and accelerate sales growth. We will also find ways to improve efficiency and ROI of the spend, as well as free up funds to continue to increase our investment in the business. So moving on to some of our programs and discussion around cost savings. Our top-line strategies will help us grow operating profit, but we're also committed to strategies around margin expansion and cost control to deliver healthy, sustainable profit for our shareholders. Going forward, we remain focused on both gross margin improvement through COGS reductions as well as SG&A reductions, which combine to represent over 75% of our total spend. Again, A&P as well as R&D are critical investment areas, where we'll seek to reduce non-working dollars and but sustain and or increase working dollars to fuel longer-term results. Drivers of gross margin improvements include both annual cost savings programs, longer-term restructuring programs, and price mix improvements. Drivers of SG&A reductions include the components of our recently announced zero-based spend program. Let me walk through the major programs with you. So we've got four programs we're working on today. 2013 restructuring, which is really currently focused specifically on our manufacturing footprint and supply chain. We've got three programs that we have initiated and nearly complete based on our spend related. We have launched this year trade promotion effectiveness as well as zero-based spending. So I'm going to walk through each of those. Starting with the 2013 restructuring program. This really started under the Energizer umbrella and focused on key aspects of reducing our workforce, consolidation of general administrative support, reduced overhead spending, as well as procurement savings. All of those programs impacted both personal care and our general corporate spend in addition to Energizer. In 2014, we announced the expansion of the scope of this program that really affected the rationalization and streamlining of personal care operating facilities. Overall, this project has delivered nearly $115 million of savings for EPC pre-2016. Some of the significant projects that we've initiated in the 2014 scope expansion, such as moving our FemCare operations from Montreal to Dover, Delaware, re-looking at our wet shea footprint, as well as making footprint changes in sun care. All of those are beginning to impact our savings this year, where we've had some decent and good savings out of sun care in particular. The savings for FemCare, given the size and scope of that project, will really start to impact us in 17. So a lot of the spending is going on in 16. The savings will start to impact us in 17. But the good news is we have completed and started to see the positive incremental improvement from some of these projects as early as 16, and we're confident in our ability to deliver the $15 million of savings in 16, and we're very confident in our ability to deliver the $40 to $50 million of savings over 17 and 18. Next, I'm going to talk about our go-to-market changes and our spin-related programs. As Colin talked about, we did make significant changes throughout our go-to-market operation and organization. And all of those actions are helped to overcome the added expense from the spinoff and establish the most efficient model we could with the scale we have as a smaller company. The savings achieved in these areas are less visible as they were designed to help offset potential incremental costs and allow us to operate profitably in markets where we don't have scale to support a full operating model. While less visible, they were no less complex or impactful. We've outsourced non-core transactional activities such as accounting and payroll processing, as well as some customer service and IT functions. We've centralized the remaining accounting and back office functions and completely revamped our go-to-market footprint, impacting international area and market overheads across all functions. These actions, largely completed, helped neutralize the margin impact of moving to distributors and helped offset incremental overhead expenses for our post-separation business. Next, I want to talk about our trade promotion project. Post-separation, we began to look at areas of investment and tools to accelerate other margin improvement levers. One of the first investments we prioritized was directed at improving trade promotion effectiveness. We kicked this project off in the fourth quarter of fiscal 15. This year, thanks to great colleague team efforts, we've implemented the new trade tool to further drive efficiency in our trade investment. In addition to improving overall ROI on our trade spend, we expect to enhance capabilities and efficiencies through better streamlined automated processes. We are also implementing the back office portion of the tool, which will replace several legacy systems in 17 and provide administrative efficiencies as well. And finally, our zero-based spending initiative. We launched zero-based spend initiative to enhance and accelerate efforts to deliver lower costs and capture savings, contribute to margin expansion goals, as well as generate funds for more investments across brands and capabilities. The scope is global, spans 11 major cost areas in this initial phase one. This phase captures more than 70% of our addressable non-headcount spend. We're just wrapping up on the visibility portion of phase one and moving into the value targeting portion of the project. In addition to eliminating non-productive spend, improving ROI and prioritization of spend initiatives, we will create the structure to make ZBS a sustainable capability and culture within Edgewell. We'll provide additional details for our savings goal in our November earnings release and call. Savings for the program will start toward the back half of 2017 with full run rate realization sometime in 18, plus ongoing discipline and capability to sustain savings in the future. Beyond these initiatives I've just reviewed, we did talk about in our third quarter conference call that we are continuing our efforts to improve organization efficiency and effectiveness with improvements in IT tools. We're currently working on a project to our ERP infrastructure focused on global supply chain and engineering processes, and we're firming up our plans for the next set of initiatives that will enable us to be more agile, more standardized and more efficient across many of our processes and functions. So just brief discussion around working capital and free cash flow. We are focused on working capital reduction as a key to generating strong cash flows. And just to remind everyone, as part of our Energizer Working Capital Project initiative back in 2012, we actually improved our working capital 630 basis points over our 11 baseline across all three metrics by the end of 2014. In 2015, we increased by about 90 basis points due to the footprint changes and plant consolidation we're currently executing. We do plan to mitigate the more recent DII increases starting in 2017 and continue to make improvement across all of the metrics over the medium to the long term. Some of the IT improvements I just discussed, including TPM, will be key enablers for further improvements. This is a key area of focus for us, and including being a component of our bonus plan. We recognize we have opportunity to improve and drive down working capital as a key driver to cash flow. And just as a reminder of our three priorities for free cash flow, number one is invest in the business to drive top-line growth, and that really is through capital expenditures, predominantly for new products, but also for cost improvement. We also are looking at disciplined M&A to grow and expand our portfolio. And our third priority is to return capital to shareholders through buybacks. Just to comment on M&A, we do look for businesses or products that are close to our core categories, global or can expand globally, competing in categories similar to ours where brands and innovation matter and that command solid margins. And I will remind you, we do have a solid track record on M&A. In fact, this entire division and new company was built on a series of M&A under the Energizer umbrella, starting with Schick & Wilkinson Stord in 2003 and ending with the Stay Free and Carefree pads and liners business acquisition from J&J in 2013. So that's really how we built the division. We've got a good track record of integration and being able to grow these businesses beyond the acquisition. And then finally, just to circle back quickly to the 2016 outlook, as David indicated in his opening remarks, we are on track to achieve our goals for the year, and that really is around flat organic sales as well as flat EBITDA. And in the face of a lot of organizational change, we're pretty happy with the results that we're looking at. Importantly, we have positive trends in segment results and market shares coming out of the third quarter, with underlying sales growth of nearly 1% year to date, as well as go-to-market and organizational changes completed. We're tracking to our expectations with the expectations we set for ourselves coming into the year. So finally, we are confident we've built a strong platform in 2016 to deliver our value drivers over the coming years, and we're making significant progress towards our long-term financial algorithm as we presented at our 2015 Investor Day. And I'll just leave you with the key takeaway slide that David started with. And thank you all for your interest in Edgewell, and I'll open it up for a question.
So we have just a minute or two. Do you want to open it up or take it to the breakout?
It says we still have a minute on the breakout, on the
Okay.
breakout. Okay. So I'll just jump right in.
Yeah.
So just as curious, on the sales growth acceleration for next year, how much of it's really based on kind of innovation and distribution gains internationally versus, you know, kind of easier comparisons, particularly in fem care? Kind of easing the burden a little bit.
Well, you know, most of the issue about comps that you know this year is really the fact that they go to market has changed, and that's cost us about a point and a half, I think, for the full year, and that's permanent. So that's in the base. So I really think the growth that that we're looking for next year really is off of the. The actual results that we see this year, and it will be generated like you mentioned by innovation, by international growth, and by in investments in the growth markets and also growth channels like e-commerce.
I think we'll go. They're lurking out there, so
yeah.
We'll go over to breakout. But thank you so much
Fair
for
enough.
Coming to the conference.
Well, thank you very much.